On. It's been a while. It's all a month since we were last learned any of this. Everyone had a nice Pesach, I hope. And they put it before, we are at the end of season three of Sefer Shmuel. Think of being three major arcs. The first one being Shmuel himself, making Shaul king. The second one of David, going from a child to becoming king, and the third one, the story of David and Bathsheba and the consequences of that. We've really ended that with the rebellion of Absalom, and this is the last episode, Perachah. It's more of a transition into Sefer Melachim. David is returning to Yerushalayim. Everyone now loves him, but everyone in the country hates each other. We are not going to connect anything to politics, what connected to politics in any way whatsoever. Okay, so he's defeated Absalom's rebellion. Every group has gone to David and said, we want you as king, but there's tension between Yisrael, which is the northern tribe, and Yehuda, single tribe in the south. Binyamin is part of Yisrael at this point. When the kingdom actually splits in Sefer Melachim, Binyamin will be part of the south, and that's an important discussion over there. But right now, Binyamin is one of the leaders of the north. There was Shaul was from Binyamin. And if you read Brandon's book, you'll know that that is a central part of it, that everything is Binyamin versus Yehuda in that book. And we'll end the last pasuk of the last parak, parak Yutet, was source one. Bayan Ish Yisrael, Ish Yehuda, the people of Yisrael, talk back, answer the people of Yehuda, Vayomer, Esher Yadot, Li Bamelach. We have 10 times the claim of the king that you do. He's our king, not yours. Gam David, even as a personal, Ani Mimcha. We have more claim with him. Madua Hikal Tani, why are you treating us so lightly? Lo haya divrei rishon, lo haya divrei rishon li lashivat malki. And weren't we, Yisrael, weren't we the first ones to bring David back after the rebellion? You, Yehuda, were still siding with Absalom. We deserve the king. By Kashtar Bar Yehuda, May Devar Yish Yisrael, and Yehuda's rejoinder, Yehuda's words to Yisrael were even harsher than Yisrael's words were. We don't have any of the details, but things were getting worse and worse. We have no reaction to David at all. Only thing we know is that when we saw David, he was reacting to Mephibosheth, last scion of Shaul, and actually was not quite sure whether Mephibosheth was still loyal. Were the people of Binyamin going to really try to undermine him or not? I mean, quoted the Gemara, Amarav Yehuda Marav, Yilmole lo kibal David Lashon Hara. David had not accepted Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth, who's the figurehead leader of Binyamin of Yisrael. Lo nechaka malchut b'David. The kingdom would never have been split. Lo abdu Yisrael avodah zarah. And Israel would never have worshipped avodah zarah. Lo galino mi'atzeinu. And we, right? Notice Rabbi Yehuda Marav is an Amora 1500 years later. And we've gone from this past history of David and malchut b'David to galino, to us. This is personal to us, that we would never have been exiled from our land. And that's going to be the focus of what I'm going to say. And I had a lot of fun working with this. If you notice, how it's 16 pages long. This is far too long. I've got far too many details in here. so hopefully it'll make sense when we all put it together, because I'm only going to deal with six psukim. But we do a lot of tiptoe through Tanakh. And you can see, okay, so if David hadn't accepted the Lashon Hara about Mephibosheth and had actually defended Mephibosheth, I can see that if that hadn't happened, then the split kingdom wouldn't have split. He could have kept these two halves together. And the second part about if they hadn't worshipped Avodah Zarah, then we would not have been exiled. That's what we talk about every Tisha B'Av. But where's the connection between, well, if the kingdom hadn't split, then they wouldn't have worshipped Avodah Zarah. What's the connection between the political side and the Avodah Zarah side? And that's what I want to look at in a little more detail, a lot more detail. So here's the beginning of our parak. Aleph, David hasn't made it back to Yerushalayim. He's coming back after the rebellion. He's just crossed the Yarden. They're all sitting in Gilgal. They have this big argument. And right then, Visham Nikra Ish Belial. And there was called a, translate Belial, a wanton. Guy who just asked randomly, psychopath. Ushmo Sheva ben Bichri. Name was Sheva ben Bichri, Ish Mini, a person of Binyamin. Takaba shofar, and he blows a shofar, which is a call to war. And he announces, "Ein lenu chelek b'David, v'nachlo lenu l'ben Yishai." We have no part in David at all, and we have no inheritance with Ben Yishai. Ish lo ahalav Yisrael, every man of Israel to their tents. And what it says b'sham nikra. What does it mean? He was called. That the word, the root kara has two different meanings, fundamentally. You could be summoned, like invited, to go somewhere. And also it means to have a calling. Like kara Hashem el Moshe is to actually have a calling. I feel like there's a purpose there. That's my Merriam-Webster definition. A strong inner impulse toward a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by conviction of divine influence. Which is hitting this idea. He's nikra. He suddenly gets inspired that now I am going to be the leader, not David. And this is the way the Malbim puts it in Vayikra. We're talking about Vayikra al Moshe, that this distinction here. Etev dibru v'zeh achronim, in source four, that the later commentators, there's a Malbim in 1890s, so he's talking about those in the early 1800s, who looked at the grammar of Tanakh and says, you know, they made a good point. Shekriya lipilon ploni, that you could have a calling to someone. It means that someone, hakaru racho, that the person being called is somewhere far away. B'shaloyach hacharav, he's being sent for. So you have all that to go to someone. That's why you call someone, it means to invite them or to summon them, if it's not optional. B'choma kom she'omer kara el piloni, but you have this lesson of kara el. Moresha karu omed lefnei hakore. That's not from a be called from a distance. It means someone who's standing right in front of the person who's doing the calling. A karoel of nearby, the kriya hu derech kavod, manner of pointing someone out that okay, now I am selecting you for this role, the chiba, some kind of affection. Minhu el adibor, that he's being appointed, whatever is being talked about here. This is very well seen that we have said the sense that this sheva ben bichri is nikra, it's passive. I don't know who's doing the karoel.
It's like the app.
What?
The L seems like it would be the opposite. I mean, if you're calling two, it feels like they'd be far away. Adding the L seems like
if
it.
If you go through.
Refer to somebody far away. I'm not.
Read that very precisely. And I did a shir on Chumash about that Moshe is by Yikra Lim Moshe to go up Har Sinai, and it's by Yikra El Moshe once he's there, meaning the example of that. It is actually quite consistent. This is interesting. More interesting to me, the fact that it's the Achronim, that wasn't something that the classical commentators noticed. Or maybe they noticed, they thought it was obvious, it wasn't quite mentioning. So, Gemara says...
But here with this guy here, it doesn't say either. It says Shunikra, it doesn't say El or Le.
Right, because it's passive. Right, if it had someone doing the calling, so we don't know who's doing the calling. So I think you have to look at it in context. There isn't anyone saying, hey, you, Sheva ben Bichri, this clearly is a within himself kind of inspiration. I mean, that it fits with the idea of a caller much more than being called to by being summoned. Right. It doesn't say Vayikra Hashem El Shem Bibikri. He's just there. But the implication that there was Hashem called him, like you've got a role now to play in the story here, is from the Gemara. Another version of what we quoted before, that if David hadn't accepted Lashon Hara, the kingdom wouldn't have been split. This is the Gemara in Yom. That was from Shabbos. This is the Gemara in Yoma. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, the version that of the same thing. B'shash Amar David L'Mephibosheth. When David tells Mephibosheth, grandson of Shaul, Amarti had declared, Atav Tzivya Techalku HaSadeh, you and Tzivya, this is the one who accused him of being disloyal, you will split the field, the estate of Shaul, instead of just saying here, this is yours, Mephibosheth. Yetzab Batko. A heavenly voice came out from Amra Lo and announced Rechavam v'Yerabam Yechalku at HaMalchut. That Rechavam, son of Shlomo, grandson of David, and Yerubbaal, who's going to lead the rebellion, the hero of the secret book of Kings, will split the kingdom. And again, I hope everyone's at least heard of the secret book of Kings and at least read the jacket cover copy. Okay, that bat call came out. And I'd say this nikra here is what they're referring to, the bat call. This bat call is the voice of Sheva ben Bichri saying, we have no part in David, no inheritance with Ben Yishai. And there's another subtlety about this. If you look in the pasuk here, it's Shem Nikra Ish Bliya'al Ushmo Sheva ben Bichri. Another one of those things that you notice, the wording here, Ushmo Sheva ben Bichri. And his name was Sheva ben Bichri. This is Bamidbar Rabba. Textual point. HaRishon Kovim L'shma. If the Tanakh introduces someone with their name, away with their name, and then says the word that was their name. For instance, Naval Shemo, Goliat Shemo, these are all quotes, Sheva Bebichri Shemo, then they're Rishayim. But Tzadikim Tzman Kodmam. But if they're introduced with a name, with the word Shem first, and then the actual name, like Shemo Elkanah, Shemo Yishai, Shemo Boaz, right, Shemo Mordechai, these are all people who are introduced by name with the sense of shame, shmo this, then they're tzaddikim. Tanakh is kind of giving you a hint of how to think about them. So Sheva ben Bichri shmo is telling you he's a bad guy. And then they immediately object, wait a minute, achu shmo Lavan. Lavan's introduced with his name, and then the word Shem and then his name. So we said that he's a tzaddik, Lavan a tzaddik. I know Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, a paradoxus. That Rabbi Yitzchak said, yeah, Rabbi Yitzchak says, yeah, Lavan was a paradox. We don't know how to really look at him. Release this idea of that Rasha'im Kodmin Lishman. I thought it was interesting, and this is Rav Kasher, another St. Louis connection. He's one of the Fredman father-in-law. But he wrote the Torah Shlema, kind of putting Midrashim together with a commentary on that. And he connects it to a Midrash in Kohelet Rabbah.
I think it's Bracha Fredman, Carmi's grandfather.
Okay.
That one.
Yeah, I knew the Fredman connection was there. We learn the following. That everyone has three names. One that was given at birth, and one that their contemporaries call them, and the third name is what gets written in their obituary after they're gone. And Kasha says of this, Haftading Shemo Sheman Kodman, that they say when it's written as their name first before that description of this is their name. That's that middle one. Not the name you're born with, but the name you make for yourself. The way you're known as. That's the way that Tanakh will, if you're tzaddik, then that's the way that Tanakh will refer to you. They did good deeds. So they're known by what they did in life. That's what they're called in their obituary as well. And we're going to say that before. It has more priority than what they were called at birth. Nowadays, we don't necessarily change our names with different roles. And Tanakh, that happens all the time. Now we add titles to that. We go from being nothing to say a mister to being a doctor or esquire. We change names as we have different roles. But you need to acquire that name for yourself. But to be a Rasha, that they haven't acquired a good name. So the name the best name they have is the one they were born with. That they left with that name they were born with. Sheven Bebichri is the Sheva Bebichri Shemo, he never makes a name for himself. It's a role, he has no real identity. We're going to see him through this chapter, they'll disappear. But really does, that role appears throughout history. and he's called an Ishbli'al, a wanton person, someone without an all, without any limits. Which is our first hint about the Avodah Zarah. That's our question here. How does Jewish rebel against David, split the kingdom, how does it lead to Avodah Zarah?
Hannah, you could just be a simple Jew, and therefore you don't have anything before or after your name. That doesn't make you Bli'al.
No, you do not actually need to have an actual title to have three names, right? I mean, it's metaphoric.
Yeah.
Think of it as, this is a potential you have when you're born. This is who you are, and this is how everyone's looking at you after you're gone.
And by the way, I got thrown off my computer a few times. So who is Shava ben Bichri? Is he related to anybody?
He is not. Here it is. Shav nikra Ishbli'al Shmo Shava Bichri. That's his name. Ishmini, he is from Binyamin. That's all we know about him. But the first time the term Bli'al is, so if you have your concordancy of Tanakh.
It's in Shoftim.
It is in Shoftim, yes. And Plegish Begiva there on Shei Bli'al. But the first time is talking about Ir Nidachat. Yetzu Anashim B'nei Bli'al. So if people Bli'al. Bli'al without restraint. Go out, make your becher from among you, be adichu at Yoshvei Iram, and they entice the people of their city, and they say, Nelchad, Nabda, Elohim Acherim, Ashlo, Yadatam, let's go worship other gods that you don't know. First use of the term of Anshei Bli'al, B'nei Bli'al, is in terms of this Avodah Zarah. He's kind of entice them to Avodah Zarah. Just a hint there. It doesn't fit the story here at all. So I'm going to have to go spend some time wandering through Tanakh to put all these pieces together. So next pasuk, that was one pasuk, introducing Sheva ben Bichri. So next pasuk, the people of Israel join him. Yal call Ish Israel, all the people of Israel, go Mecharei David, leave David, Acharei Sheva Bichri, and they go and join Sheva ben Bichri. The Ish Yehuda, Dav Kuba Malkam, but the people of Yehuda stay with their king, Mini Arden, Yerushalayim, and they go with him to Yerushalayim. So Kol Ish Israel doesn't mean all the people of Israel. This is not a full-blown civil war at this point. It talks about the people from Israel who came to bring David back initially. So that previous parak, the Elef Ish Imo B'Binyamin, the Tibia Nar B'Shaul, so 1,000 people from Binyamin came to bring David back. With Tziva, B'Chamesha Sarbanav, his 15 sons, the Esrim Abadav, and 20 servants. Tzalchu Yardin of the Melech, and they overwhelmed the Jordan. They're all so eager to bring David back. And then things soured. When they came back, by Avora Melcha Gilgala, the king crossed the Jordan to get to Gilgal, which is on the western side. Gamahana Varimo, and this is the son of Barzillai Giladika, went with them. B'chol Am Yehuda Avru et HaMelech. So people of Yehuda stayed with David. B'gam Chatzi Am Yisrael, but half of the B'nai of Yisrael went with David. The other half had already been burned by this whole discussion, the whole argument there. So time to they cross the Jordan. Half of the 1,000 men abandoned David. Now all the rest of them are leaving David. So it's not a huge civil war. There are 500 men with Sheva ben Bichri. So what does David do? He does nothing. He goes back home, at least right now. By a vote, David el Beitel Yerushalayim goes back to his palace in Yerushalayim that he hasn't seen for at least 6 months, probably a year, while Avshalom's rebellion was going on. Ve'kach ha-melech et eser nashim plagshim. Remembers Perek Yerchet. First thing Avshalom did was take David's concubines and then publicly set a tent up on the roof of the palace and go unto them in public to say, I am now the king. I have taken the king's wives. So David takes those 10. Asher niyach lishmar ha-dabayat, David had left them behind to guard the palace. By name Beit Mishmeret, and he's put them aside in a guarded house. Prison is probably too harsh for that. By chalkeim supported them. By lehem labai would not go to them. Tatanet shurot, and they were bound at yom matan until they died. Amanot chayot, widows, living widows. They were agunot. And that pasuk needs a lot more attention. but I'm not sure what to do with that. So I'm going to ignore that right now. So we're going to skip that part. But if anyone has a good thing to say, please let me know about this. I'm not sure what to do with this idea of him taking these women and turning them into agunot because they've been violated by Avshalom. But I'm going to go on. So now David looks at this rebellion that's gone on. Sheba Bichri has gone off with 500 men. Yomar Melech El Amasa. And so Melech turns to Amasa, who is his chief of staff. Hazek Li at Ishu Dach Shlosha Yamin. Go call someone, muster up all the people of Yehuda over the next 3 days. Batat Pa'amod, and you come back here. We need to go to war here. So Amasa goes and to summon Yehuda. And he was late. That's sense of Acher from the time appointed. I show you Yadu that they had set aside. So 3 days later, David's waiting for Amasa to come back with an army, and there's nothing. Remember David El Avishai. Then David turns to Avishai, another one of his generals. Atat Yeralanu Sheba Bibichri Min Avshalom. If this goes on, Sheba ben Bichri will be worse for us than anything that Avshalom did. So you take whatever people we can find here. Rudof acharav and go chase him. En matzelo arim b'tzirot, lest he find himself in a fortified city, v'tzil einenu, and he'll be saved from us. He'll be protected from our eyes, literally. So we need to attack now. I can't wait for Amasa to come back with a larger force. Take whatever you can find here. V'yitzu acharav anshei Yoav. So Yoav, another general. His people went after Avishai, Bakreti, Bapleti, more of the David's forces, the Kol Gibarim, and all of David's heroes, and all the people that had been him from day one back when he was in Midbar Yehuda. The Yitzu Mirshalayim, and they leave Yerushalayim, their dof, Achrei Sheva Ben Bichri, and they go chase Sheva Ben Bichri. They go back to these Pesukim. So the person he's putting in charge of the response is Amasa. So if you've got all of your Tanakh memorized, you'll know exactly who that is. No one has any members of Amasa. So Amasa was Avshalom's general. But Amasa some Avshalom. Avshalom appointed Amasa Tachat Yoav al Tzava. Instead of Yoav was David's general, Amasa is Avshalom's general. Amasa ben Ish, and Amasa was a son of a true man, a hero. Yitra Israeli, that's his father, Shebal, Abigail, but Nachash, Achot Shriya. Basically, Amasa is the daughter of Abigail, the sister of Shriya, who's the sister of David. So Shriya is the mother of Yoav and of Avishai. Those are the ones who are David's generals. This is another nephew of David. Amasa is another nephew of David that Avshalom appointed as his general. But when Yoav kills Avshalom, David appoints Amasa in his place after the rebellion. Right? This is source 16. Amasa Tamru, and David commands, and tell Amasa that even though you were a leader of rebellion against me, I'm giving you full amnesty. Hello, Atzmi B'Sariata, you are my flesh and blood. Ko Yasel Yokim, Ko Yosef, I swear on God. Imlo Sartsevat Yelofanai, you will be my general. In the place of Yoav. So David fires Yoav for defying his orders. Okay, he was supposed to spare Avshalom. Yoav kills Avshalom. David fires him and appoints Amasa to say, okay, we're going to bring everybody back. I'm giving amnesty for those who joined Avshalom. We talked about that. David tried to reunite the kingdom from this rebellion here. So Amasa now is David's general. Yoav has been fired. He's nowhere to be seen anywhere in this whole commentary. This will turn out very badly because Yoav does not like being fired. So he's going to go kill everybody he can find. That's a spoiler.
I mean, it feels like David's lost his, his seichel when it comes to who he can trust.
That's probably always been true through that. He tends to be very trusting of everyone, and I think that part of the mistake here is this emphasis on Atzmiu Bisari. I mean, even with trying to unite the kingdom, he still has got his, it's just another nephew that he's appointing. Amir came out and said, wish me happy birthday. Thank you. Somebody remembered.
Is it your birthday, Danny?
It is my birthday, yes.
You happy birthday.
Thank you.
We talked about
happy birthday.
Come on, happy birthday.
I must have been thrown off, as usual.
Okay, so I think that's going to be a problem, that David is focusing on Atzmiu Bisari, so that's why the rest of Israel thinks, well, he's only interested in Yehuda, and that builds on what's happening here. So he gives Amasa 3 days to muster the army. Absolutely nobody wants to go back. They just fought this whole civil war. Everyone wanted to go back home to their fields and their family. So Amasa takes too long. They're not there. So David asks Abishai, who's Yoav's brother, to assemble the Hakreti Vapleti Bekol Giburim. So who are the Kreti Vapleti? We've actually seen them once before at the end of Perachet. Clearly they're important. This is in the end of Perachet. This is the version of Dibre Yamin, which is a little easier to understand. When it summarizes David's administration, he had Kohanim, he had Zocher, he had secretaries, he had secretary of the interior, foreign ministers, all of that summarized in this in that parak back there. It says, Ubiniyahu ben Yehoyada ala kreti vapleti. On the kreti vapleti. Rei David Arishonim, the Aramelch, and his sons helped him. So, who are the kreti vapleti? The Targum says they were a military force. Benyahu ben Yada was appointed al Kashtaya, the archers of al Kalaya on the slingers. That's crazy.
That was his Mari men before he was king.
Well, these are not. The Giborim are, and we see a long list of those. This the crazy plate are not mentioned anywhere else.
Mm.
At least not earlier. They're only mentioned at once David becomes king.
Wow.
So the Radak says, well, they were probably the names of families. That's what it sounds like. Kreti, Pleti. There were families who were David's personal palace guard. So Radak is Mefarshim Kreti, Pleti, Shtei Mishpachot, Hayum, Yisrael, Chiyu Sarim, El Mashmot HaMelech, that they would always be turned to the command of the king, who there were his own personal guards. Ro'im Pneim, Panav Tamid, and we always be before him. Benayahu Hayum Barsham, Benayahu was the head of them. So that's the ones he's, so he's sending these Kreti Uplati to go chase after Sheba ben Bichri. They need to
so
do
it's like together. A royal guard or something?
Right. Yeah, or his own personal police as opposed to the army or the police. The Gemara says, no, that they were judicial. They were the Sanhedrin. Mm. Because the word Sanhedrin would be an anachronism here. It's Greek, but the idea that they were the judges.
Mm.
This is the Gemara and Sanhedrin. Achrei Achitofel, when the Rebbe lists the administration, there was Achitofel, who obviously was David's advisor until the whole Absalom disaster. But now you have Yehoyada, who we just said was in charge of the Kreti Pleti. Eviatar was the Kohen, the Sar Tzavah Melech Yoav, and the general was Yoav. And the Gemara explains Achitofel is the Yoetz, Achitofel is the advisor. Now Yehoyada is the Sanhedrin. Now Yehoyada represents Sanhedrin. And Eviatar was the Urim and Tumim. Eviatar the Kohen Gadol. He had the Urim and Tumim. That's what they needed in order to go to war. Keno Amer, Veneo ben Yada al Kreti Pleti. Veloma Nikra Shman Kreti Pleti. And why were they called the Kreti Pleti? Why were the Sanhedrin, the judges, the time called Kreti Pleti? Kreti Shakotin de Braham Kreti, because they literally cut off their words. They make decisions with Pleti, Shemuflin, but Masehem, that they do wondrous things. The Torah talks about going to a judge is ki yiflam imcha, that things are too complicated for you. They made decisions. And afterwards, the army would go. So that's the order of determining when you go to war. You need to involve the Sanhedrin, Kreti Uplati. And later, the Kreti Uplati are the ones who would anoint Shlomo and Melachim, which also sounds like more of a judicial role, political role. And we have Bayeret Siddur HaKohen, Ratan Avi, Binyah V'yada, Va'kreti Va'pleti. They go and they anoint Shlomo. So the question is, when he's sending this group out to go catch Sheva Mibichri, is this Kreti Pleti military or judicial? And the answer to any or question, Tanakh, is always yes. They're both. There's no separation, you know, just like there's no separation of church and state in this time. There's no separation between civil and military leadership. There's no separation between judge and executioner. And I had the point, there's no posse comitatus act, which I like quoting that. In other words, the army acts as police. You can't do that in the US. Here, it's the army doing it with the police there. That here, we have this vision of the Sanhedrin with a capital Samach as being this old, a bunch of old men sitting around debating Torah. But I think in David's time, the Gibborim were the Talmidei Chachamim. They were making these decisions. And he's setting them out both to fight and to cast judgment on Sheva Bichri and to execute the judgment as well. And we'll talk about this. But the Gibborim were the Talmidei Chachamim. And how chacham there were. We have to look at that. But Perikin Kaf Gimel is basically the long list of those Giborim. So he's sending out the Preti Pleti to go catch Sheva ben Bichri. And the reason, because he wants us to defeat him quickly. Sheva only has a small group with him. He hasn't actually started a civil war. So right now it's a police action. It's not a war. He wants to be able to arrest him, get it done. Because if he doesn't, it's going to spread. David sees that it's going to spread, and it's going to be worse than Absalom's rebellion. That's what he says. Now, if we wait any longer, Sheva Bichri is going to be worse than Absalom. So Absalom would have taken over the kingdom, but it still would have been there. Sheva Bichri is going to split the kingdom, break everything apart. And we know that's going to happen, because that's exactly what would happen under Yerovam ben Nevat. 40 or some odd years from now. This exact rebellion with the exact same words are going to happen in Sefer Malachim. And this is the story of Rechavam, which we're all familiar with. Lo Shama Melech Ha'am, and Rechavam, who's the king, son of Shlomo, doesn't listen to the people because he wants to do things his way. He's going to tax them and oppress them. Yatasi ba me'im Hashem, because really this was all manipulated by God. Because this was all a prophecy from Achia, who's a Navi, to El Yerovam ben Nevat. We'll quote that later. But Rechavam had no, really at this point had no free will. This was going to fall apart. But Yaakov Yisrael, Kilo Shamal Melchahem, and the people of Israel, the northern tribes, saw that the king didn't listen to them. The Yeshua Am El Amelach, Davar, and they answered the king and they said, Ma Lanu Chelek B'David. We have no part in David anymore, lo nachla ben Yishai, and no inheritance with the son of Yishai, lo alech Yisrael. Go to your tents, O Israel. Atara e betcha David. Now, David, go, you look to, look, watch out for yourself, because we're leaving. Ayelech Yisrael halav, and all of Israel left. Same words. People of Israel at that point use the same word. Ein lo chelek ben David, we have no part in David, lo nachla ben Yishai, we have no we know portion with son of Yishai, Ish lo'olav Yisrael. Excuse me, I got pitched. That's Leah. Can I answer this for a second? Sorry. Hi, Leah. I'm giving my Chumash here, my Tanakh here.
Oh, sorry. Okay, we'll call back.
Okay, bye. Or you can join us.
Yeah, we'll join. I'll come join.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, sorry about that. So, 4 years later, Bnei Israel are saying to Rechavam, king of the United Israel, the same words that Sheva ben Bichri said. Ein lanochel b'David, lanachla ben Yishai, ish lo halav Yisrael. And that's not really literally short foreshadowing. This is a quote. It's the same rebellion. David doesn't end it. It only ends up being suppressed. And for 40 years, the people of Yisrael, of the north, are kind of brewing in this hatred of Yehuda here. And that's why it comes back to the secret book of Kings, gives you the sense that they felt that everything that Shlomo was doing was really for his own power, centralizing everything in Yerushalayim. And Chazal saw that connection between Sheva ben Bichri and Yerovam ben Nevat 40 years later. This is the Targum Kohelet. When the Pasuk in Kohelet says, Erakol asa yafe b'ito. God did everything right in his appropriate time. Gamat olam natan b'libam, mibli ashal yimtza damat hamaseh sheyaseh Elokim, that everything in the world, I'm not sure quite how to translate that, that Hashem puts things into people's hearts that people don't know about. So yimtza hamaseh sheyaseh Elokim, and we don't know where, how things will work out. Merosh v'asof from beginning to the end. We don't know how Hashem will work, make history work out, but Hashem does everything in the right time. So this is a Targum Kohelet on this. Now the Targum Kohelet is not a literal translation, it's very midrashic. Amar Shlomo Malka. Shlomo the king said, Baruch Nevoah had the spirit of prophecy, looking at what was going on in his time. And it wasn't, I don't know if it was necessarily literally prophecy, because it should have been obvious that this was brewing. Kula avar Hashem shapir be'idane. God did everything correctly in the right time. The chaza, because he saw, avat matzuta dahava b'yemei Yerovam ben Nevat, that this rebellion, this struggle that happened in the days of Yerovam, could have happened, the meheve, should have happened, b'yomei Sheva ben Bichri, should have been in the time of Sheva ben Bichri. Yitakavat, and then Hashem made it delayed. So therefore it happened in the days of Yerovam. Ilu Havab Yemei Sheva Bichri, because had Sheva Bichri succeeded, had this split of the kingdom happened in the time of Sheva ben Bichri, Lo Havet Mitbnei Beit Mukadisha. A Mikdash would never have been built. By holding things together, at least for the time of Shlomo, we could build the base of Mikdash and have some hope for the future. And why would the base of Mikdash been built? Al Isak Iglin the Had Abed Yerovam, because Yerovam built golden calves. And if Sheva ben Bichri had succeeded in his rebellion, he would also have built golden calves. And then the Beis Hamikdash would never have been built, and everything would have fallen apart. So if you want to understand Sheva ben Bichri, we have to figure out the story of Yerovam ben Nevat. So we have to jump forward by about 40 years to look at Yerovam ben Nevat and somehow connect it to golden calves, which connected to the Avodah Zarah, which again, it's kind of, we're starting to get pieces here of why the split of the kingdom leads to Avodah Zarah. So we're going to have to go through all of the story of Rabbi Ben Nevat from Sefer Malachim. Vahila et ziknat Shlomo. So when Shlomo got old, Nashav heteyot levavo, all of his wives turned his heart. Acharei Elohim Acharim, after other gods. He had all these wives from other countries. They worshiped their own gods, and Shlomo was tolerant of them. He built the temples to every foreign god he could find. Loyal Yavavo Shalem im Hashem, and he was not wholehearted with God. Elokav Kulavav David Aviv was nearly as good as David, his father, was. So Vayomar Hashem l'Shlomo. Hashem tells Shlomo, there was a Navi going to him, telling him, Yanashar Tazot imcha. Since you're doing all of this, lo shemarta b'riti b'chukotai, and you're not keeping my covenant, my rules, asher tziviti alecha, that I've commanded you, akrat hamamalcha me'alecha, and atatihu avadecha. I'm going to tear the kingdom from you and give it to your servant. This expression, akra, happened to Shaul. The kingdom was torn from him. David was threatened that he was going to lose the kingdom as well, be given to someone from his household. So too, this is Shlomo, it's not Rechav. Shlomo was told, I'm going to tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your servants. But I'm not going to do it during your days. While you're alive, for the sake of David, I'm going to let you finish your reign. Now he's old now. He doesn't have many years to live, so it's not a long time. I will tear it from your son. That's Rechav. But I'm not going to tear away the entire kingdom. Your son will get one tribe. L'man David Adi, for the sake of David, l'man Yerushalayim, for the sake of Yerushalayim, Hashem Bachati, that I have chosen Yerushalayim. You get one tribe, that's Yehuda. So at that time, now the Pesukim has a bunch of different people who are enemies of Shlomo, and then by Pasuk Chafav, we mentioned Yerovam ben Nevat. We don't know anything about his background. Ephrati, he's from Ephraim. Minat Sarada, he's from a city called Sarada. Shemi Mo Shruya, and his mother's name is Shruya. Isha Amana, he was a widow. Eved Lashemot, Yerobam was one of Shlomo's servants. Vayorem Yad Bamelech, and he rebelled against the king. Again, this is Shlomo, this is not Rechavam yet. And how did he rebel? Zedavar Sharim Yad Bamelech, this is what he did in his rebellion. Shlomo Banat Hamilo. So Shlomo had a huge building campaign in Yerushalayim. He built up the Milo, which was the kind of the filled in part of Yerushalayim to level out those hills. Sagar Peretz Ir David Aviv and sealed any of the breaches in the wall of Ir David. Vaish Yerubim Gibor Chayel, and Yerubim was a strong man. Vayar Shlomo Tainar, and Shlomo saw him when he was young. He has some lachak because he was good at all this work. Shlomo put Yerubim in charge of all the work of Bet Yosef. Well, Shlomo had basically a levy, a tax, and everyone had to work for so many months on his building projects, and Yerubim was the one in charge of getting everyone from Yosef. It's not a rebellion. Yerubim, as far as we know, is perfectly loyal at this point. So it was at this time. When Hashem tells Shlomo, okay, that's it, you've done the wrong thing, I'm tearing the kingdom from you. Yerubim yetzam Yerushalayim, and Yerubim was leaving Yerushalayim. And mitzei oto Achya Shiloni Hanavi. So a Navi, known as Achya Shiloni, Achya from Shiloh, finds him baderach on the way, who mitkaseh b'simla chadasha. And he, Achya, is wearing a brand new suit. Yishnim levadam basadeh, and both of them are alone in the fields. No one can see them or hear them. So Achya takes his new cloak, Asher Allah that he was wearing, by crush Namasar Kraim and tears into 12 pieces. The Navi is going to do something symbolic here. Rabbam, and he tells you, Rabbam, you take 10 of these pieces. Yichom Hashem, okay, Israel, so thus saith the Lord, Mi karatam amacham yad Shlomo, I've torn away the kingdom from Shlomo, natati lacha, adasara eshalatim. I'm giving you 10 tribes. But one tribe would be left for Shlomo, Lamana di David, for the sake of David, Laman Yerushalayim, Ha'ir Asher Bachati, and the sake of Yerushalayim, which is a city that I've chosen. And Achia is emphasizing this here, Rabbi. Yerushalayim is still the city I've chosen. Because you take Israel from all the tribes of Israel, and then you have the question, well, we have 12 pieces, 10 go to Yerubim, one stays with Shlomo. What about the missing one? That's a discussion for Sefer Malachim. But Yerubim is going to be king over 10 tribes. And I will, and the Navi is saying, that God says, I will take you, you will rule over everything, anything that you want. You will be the all-powerful ruler. You'll be the king over Israel. And if you listen to what I command you, and you go in my ways, do the right thing, and you keep my commandments, like David did, I will be with you, and I will build a dynasty for you. You keep the Torah, all my commandments, and then you, Rabban ben Nevat, will be the next true king of Israel, and your dynasty will last forever. That's wonderful. And evidently, even though they were alone in the field, somebody found out about this. And Yerushalmo tries to kill Yerubim. Just like Shaul and David, Yerushalmo tries to chase on Yerubim. So Yerubim goes, and he runs away to Egypt, to Sheikh HaShach, who's the pharaoh there. He stays in Egypt until Shlomo dies. That's the origin story of Yerubim ben Nevat. Loyal chief of the workforce for Shlomo. The prophet comes to him and says, you're going to be the king. Shlomo finds out, tries to have him killed, and he runs away to Egypt. And then we have the story that Rechavam becomes the king, and Rechavam refuses to listen to the people, and Yerubim leads the rebellion and actually becomes king over Israel, over the 10 tribes. Binyamin stays with Yehuda, and that's the story for understanding why the story from Malachim. If you read the secret book of Kings, she just says, no, that never happened, and Binyamin always stayed part of the northern kingdom, and the southern kingdom was just Yehuda. That's a problem with the secret book of Kings, because you're missing an important thematic point there. But he declares, David, he says, we don't have no part in David, he steps to the king. Once he's the king, he decides he has a problem. So you, excuse me, I gotta open the door.
Hi, Aunt Susie. Hi.
Oh, hi.
We're on video.
Okay, so Yerobam is now the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and he figures that he decides he's got a problem. What's his problem? Is that he doesn't have the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is in Yehuda. And the way I would read it, I said that was his fault. It could have been a part of his kingdom, but he rejects it. Remember, Achia says, you need to keep the Torah, and instead Yerobam goes his own way. Yomer Yerobam Bilibo, and Yerobam says to himself, Atata Shuba Mamachal Beit David. Now that I'm king here, but they're going to. He's very excited about Tanakh. The kingdom's going to return to Beit David. Why? If the people go and they go back to Beit HaMikdash, which is in Yehuda, in Yerushalayim, they're going to bring their carbon out there. They're all going to serve there. Everyone's going to be going 3 times a year to this rump kingdom of Yehuda. They'll be leaving the kingdom of Israel. Everyone's going to say, remember how wonderful Rechabam was, the son of Shlomo and David, Melech Yehuda, king of Yehuda. They're going to decide this whole civil war was a mistake. Arguni, they're going to kill me. B'shavu al Rechavam Melchida. If they keep going back to Yerushalayim and serving Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash, they're eventually going to end up back in Rechavam's hands. And then I'm dead. Vayuatz HaMelech. So the king took advice and decided, Vayashne Egle Zahav. Rabbam decides, I'm going to make 2 golden calves. Yomar Alehem said about them, Rab Lachem Elot Yerushalayim, told the people, you don't have to go to Yerushalayim anymore. Hinei Elohecha Yisrael, these are your gods of Israel, Asher Halucham, Eretz Yerushalayim, who took you out of Egypt. And Leah is shaking her head because that's just a bad idea, right? I mean, right.
It's so weird that he uses the same language.
It is. That's what we're talking about. I still have another 12 pages to deal with that. I mean, it's exactly the point. But yes, I'm at
the weird though, like,
yes, I'm at the Chab of Adel. Yeah, it's like he takes advice. I know how I'm going to save my kingdom. I'm going to make golden calves. I'm going to tell Elo Hak Yisrael Shalukim Eretz Yisrael. So, yes, I'm at the Chab of Adel, and he put one of them in Beit El, which is a city in Yerushalayim at the border between Binyamin and Ephraim. But the Chab Natan B'Dan put the second golden calf in Dan, which is in the north. Right? Basically, modern Banyas, source of the Yarden.
This reminds me of the story of Pesach Micha.
Ah, very good. Okay, so we're gonna connect Pesach Micha and connect the original golden calf, right? We can't ignore those things. We gotta put all these pieces together. Right. That's Pesach Micha is incredibly important. But the text tells us, right, a little judgment by the narrator, Bahia Devar Zel Khatat, this was a sin. In case you weren't clear on this. This was a bad idea. And the people went all the way to the north. Israel were very into these calves. And also he makes bamot, individual personal altars, which were legal before they built the Beit HaMikdash. But once the Beit HaMikdash is built, you're not supposed to have any bamot, you're not supposed to have any your own individual altars. You should only go to the central Mizbeach Yerushalayim, but he built Beit Bamot, Beyaz Kohanim, Mikotzot Ha'am, and he established Kohanim, priests from the very edges of the people, from all corners, Ashalo Hayu Mibnei Levi, that were not genetically Kohanim. He makes his own Kohanim. Beyaz Yerobam Chag B'Chodesh Hashmini, B'Chamishar Sayom L'Chodesh, and Yerobam declared a national holiday on the 15th day of the 8th month of Cheshvan. right? Kechag Asher B'Yudah, just like Chag, which is Sukkot, when it's just Chag by itself, just like Sukkot is the 15th day of the 7th month, he says we're going to have a new Yantif on the 15th of the 8th month. That's the Yisrael holiday. Ve'alam Mizbeach, and he offers Olot on his altar that he built himself in Beit El. He offers sacrifices in front of these calves, that golden calves that he built. He establishes his own Kohanim. That's Yerubba. So somehow he goes from Achil Shalom, and he says, you're going to, you know, keep my commandments and you'll be the, and you'll be a king just like David. And instead he comes a king and he builds golden calves and establishes a bunch of different temples all throughout the country, and things fall apart from there. Not a good story. So that's a connection, right? We asked, how do you go from Nechaka Malchut Beit David to Avdi Yisrael Avodah Zarah? And the answer, we see it over here. But that only begs the question in the sense of why, right? Okay, yes, that's what happened. I agree. Why? Where does that go? Why does Yerubba build a golden calf, right? Golden calves are a bad idea. And we said that before, that's the target, right? You will have it be a Sheva ben Bichri. If Sheva Bichri had done it in our time, then he would have, we're assuming that he would have built golden calves as well. And then lo have it b'nei beit mikdusha, that the base of Midrash would never have been built. The Alasik Eglin, because of those golden calves. Why not, right? Sheva ben Bichri would have built golden calves. Somehow this is obvious that we're going to build a golden calf. So that's what we have to figure out. It is unfortunately just about 10 o'clock, so I'll stop here and we'll continue on next time to try and figure out the golden calf. But first, we're going to figure out what's the deal with Dan and Beit El. Why those two places? Now, Janice already told us where Dan came from. That's from Pesel Micha. But we're going to look at Beit El, why that as well. But I'm going to stop here. I'm going to stop recording.
What did I say? 10 minute
walk. Thank
you. Andy
has a question for you.
Yeah.
So in the book, in the book, Yerubbaam is a descendant of Shaul. Is that not correct?
That is not correct. Okay. So that is a problem. One of the problems I have is that Yerubbaam is explicitly called Ephrati from Ephraim. But Brandis is very focused on keeping the entire rebellion of Yerubbaal as being connected to Shaul and Binyamin. So basically, she claims that A, Binyamin never joined Yehuda, and that was a lie by the authors of Malachim. And B, Yerubbaal is actually secretly descended from Shaul on his mother's side, and from Sheva ben Bichri, who really was from Binyamin on his father's side. So the genealogy, I think, it's not in the text at all. And we're going to talk about that. Because Chazal say that Sheva ben Bichri from Binyamin was in fact Yerubbaam's father. But I would say that's a midrashic sense, right? He's the spiritual father of Yerubbaam without being literally genetically related. But she takes the midrash more literally.
Right, and Chelsea writes that Yerubbaam was not exactly enthralled with Shlomo, and you know, was sort of subversive the whole time, and not sort of this loyal servant.
Right, I think that's a reasonable reading. Okay, that he does, you know, why is he picked as being the one who's going to overthrow Shlomo? I think it's reasonable to say that he's got this before. So, that's a reasonable way of writing an alternate history. You know, sort of putting details right in there that aren't in there. To go actually against the text explicitly, I think, takes away from the strength of alternate history, because part of the appeal is to say, here's a different way of looking at the text that we have.
Right.
Say something different, lose that. So the idea that he's always against Shlomo, I think that's a powerful thing. And I think it makes a point that, you know, we get the impression that everyone loves Shlomo, but that's not necessarily true.
Okay.
So I'm going to stop.